and the sun goes down, another world comes to life. If the lines must be crossed, if loyalties must be broken, do it fast and furious.
Let's go for a little ride.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. Today is the first episode in our month-long series of episodes where we dissect and discuss the Star Wars of our generation, Fast and Furious films. We're going to do the whole franchise, and today we're going to discuss the first two films in the series, The Fast and the Furious, and Too Fast, Too Furious. And of course, I had to bring in some movie perts. That's short for experts. So I brought in the family. Of course, we have Alonzo Duralde, Wheelman, Drea Clark, Wheel Lady. But we also brought in writer, comedian, famous Minnesotan, and you may know her from Mystery Science Theater 3K, Mary Jo Peel, as the Wheel Lady as well. Everyone gets a car. Welcome, everyone, to the most important series of episodes I think we've done in my tenure as host.
So, oh, without question.
Second being as, Judy.
As Martin Scorsese would say, this is cinema.
Yeah. Oh, so I think the first thing we're going to ask is, what is everyone's relationship to these movies?
Iffy, I'm going to jump in. I love these motion pictures. I think it is important, as much of an indie head that I am, one of my things when I like to go to the cinema, when we can go to the cinema, I love when I can see a lot of money spent stupidly on a screen. And that is what these films represent. And the chaos energy that like grew like nuclear, I'm going to do my Bush, nuclear fission, and just like bundles up and gets weirder with each one. Went to pretty much all of these opening night. I think all of those things are true, although it sounds like I'm doing a bit.
Yeah.
That's my relationship. Ooh. I very earnestly enjoy these films.
All right. What about you, Mary? How are you feeling about the Fast franchise?
Well, I'm gonna be totally confessional. I really didn't have a relationship with these. I mean, I'd heard of them. There was a certain apocryphal element because I thought, who would make movies like this? I feel like if the Fast and the Furious franchise was on Facebook, it would come up under people you may know, like know people who know the Fast and Furious franchise, but pretty much zero relationship with it.
Yeah. And Alonzo?
I saw the first one and was sort of whatever about it. And then I kind of tuned out, and then I had to review 4 and I was pretty whatever with that. But then, like, I think a lot of people, 5 was suddenly like, Oh, we're doing something else. Yeah. This is becoming another thing. And then from that point on, I was unabashedly hooked. And then I went back and discovered 3, which is amazing, which I can't wait for you to see, Iffy.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
Otherwise, you know, I hold to my convictions the early ones.
See, that's, I am like, when you watch The Fast and the Furious and you think back to 2001, and you wonder who the target was for that. Who were the $200 million that came running into the theaters for this? This was young Iffy Shakude to the T, point in and out. I mean, I was watching this, and I clapped at the end. I scoffed at points and was like, this is a masterpiece, because not only did it trigger that nostalgic thing, I was like, this is a masterpiece in the sense that they knew who they were going for, and they hit all of the buttons. They knew.
Funny story. I once got pulled over by an aggressive Beverly Hills policeman on my way back into West Hollywood, who was convinced that I had been street racing because I drove.
Wait, what were you driving at the time?
I had like a Mazda that was like apparently popular among street racers.
But yeah, I was
like,
going to say, you're going to have to give us the make, the, you know, the model, because the Mazda.
It was something I don't remember
what kind
it was.
He was in a Nova.
It's one of the ones. It's one of my cars that got blown up in 2011. But that's another story. Anyway,
did you have to overnight parts from Japan?
I mean, I did have the laptop in my driveway. Yeah. No, it was me and Dave and another friend of ours, like three like middle aged schlubs, like, oh, doing some street racing. I'm like, are you kidding me? No.
Excellent. I would have paid to have like been in the back seat or just part of that interaction.
So. Let me get a quick synopsis of the Fast and the Furious from 2001's The Fast and the Furious from IMDb. Los Angeles street racer Dominic Toretto falls under the suspicion of the LAPD as a string of high-speed electronics trucks, which I have to point out, these trucks that are being robbed are TV-DVD combo, and they're worth millions of dollars.
Yes.
Brian O'Connor, an officer of the LAPD, joins the rank of Toretto's highly skilled racing crews undercover to convict Toretto. However, O'Connor finds himself both enamored with this new world and in love with Toretto's sister, Mia. As a rival racing crew gains strength, O'Connor must decide where his loyalty really lies. Mm-hmm. Giving that away in the synopsis is too much, because they kind of like do a reveal that he's a cop, and it's really, I was really like, this is kind of cool when he's getting pulled over and you're like, why is he getting pulled over? And he's like, yeah, we had to make it look real because you're an undercover cop. And you're like, whoa, 2001, if he was like, oh, what?
Yeah, it is built into the story that it's supposed to be a reveal. And there's a lot of times in many films where I'll watch and be like, aw, they wanted us to have that like be a moment.
Yeah.
I thought they handled it well. I don't think anybody, even at the time, was too like, oh, what? He's a cop. Like,
yeah.
So my favorite thing in the setting up of him as a cop, and also the FBI is involved for some reason, somehow.
Yeah, that was a layer.
Like, in addition to you mentioning, so, you know, with all of these films, I'm sure we're going to keep coming back to this, but they have to do such elaborate narrative machinations to make the cars a required part of the story.
Yeah.
And, like, the reverse engineering, pardon a car pun, of trying to make it necessary for them to be drivers is built in from the first second we see one of these holdups, and like these precision drivers in matching cars with like green underlights for some reason,
yeah,
come around this truck and pull, and I'm like,
because you don't want to be noticed.
Yeah,
right. But yeah, I'm like, well, I don't know if it's because I'm smart or lazy, but I can think of a lot of better ways to steal from that truck than all of these cars. And so, yeah, so it's very funny for me throughout how the cars are built into the story in ways that would be totally unnecessary.
Is it just me, or in that opening sequence, does the film, does the truck leave and it's still daytime, but then suddenly it's night?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yes.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah.
The sun sets real quick.
Yeah. I got really hung up on the FBI and the cops working together, because if you've binge watched Bosch over the past 3 days, like I have, you know that there is no relate. They hate each other. So I got really stuck on that.
We learned this in Die Hard too.
Yeah.
That would never happen. Also, that would never happen.
It was also implied that the somehow the FBI was going to advance him to detective if he got this case off.
Right.
Which also, like,
yeah
when you think about it, it still was. Like, I don't see why it was on a federal level when it seemed like it's still petty theft of electronics. Like,
millions of dollars of DVD players.
I'm guessing it's because it's like
VCR players.
Yeah. They're combo units, you guys.
Yeah.
I think it was set up because it's like across state lines or some nonsense. But it is funny because he is the promotion that he's offered is not even within the LAPD.
Yeah.
It's an FBI, like, oh, well, you're in the like LAPD FBI, like, as if that's a program.
Yeah.
But even,
can you make a lateral move like that?
Oh,
like, that
that's
was
how
a,
the FBI
I get hung
gets
up on
their
the logistics.
Best people is from undercover LAPD. I would love to get into more of the family, as you talked about Mr. Dominic Toretto.
Yeah, so this
and
is the
that whole, I mean, because that's what the big through line is, but that's also the big reveal, right? Like,
yeah,
we meet him, we meet Mia.
I'll run you
sweet
down.
Sweet dum-dums that work for them.
Yeah, so we have We have Jordana Brewster playing Mia Toretto, Michelle Rodriguez, Letty Ortiz. We have Matt Schulze as Vince, and we have Chad Lindberg playing Jesse, who has ADD, but it seemed like he's playing it like he's on the spectrum. And Johnny Strong as Leon. You know, they build up Vince, who also has a crush on Mia, but has known Dominic since he was in third grade, which means he's been like, you know, lusting after his sister for many years, and proven in their interactions to her unwanted advances.
Yes.
Yet Dom is still allowing him to be in the family, allowing him to hang around.
Yeah.
And the thing is, that as we get into the later really good movies in the back half of this franchise, like this becomes this very tight knit group, and it's very ride or die, and everybody's in, and everybody's, you know, working together. But this movie is very expendable with the side character. Like basically, it all becomes about Brian and Dom and Mia, and the rest of the guys can like kind of go fuck off as far as the movie is concerned, which is weird when you're used to these new movies where, like, no matter what's going on, you killed Han? No, you can be in the group anyway. Like, you know, the whole dynamic changes.
On top of that, I will say the thesis statement of the Fast and the Furious is different than all of the other ones, because Dom's big, like, emotional speech, he's standing in front of his dad's car, he's talking about how he was killed, and he does the whole, like, I live my life a quarter mile of a time, and in that time none of the rest of this shit matters, not them, not you. And I'm like, wait, I thought everything was about family, like you just said. So that, like, literally that they were like, scrap that, go back.
True.
Yeah,
actually, well, everything, these people always matter, a quarter mile doesn't. Got it.
Yeah.
We also learn in this movie that the very worst thing that can happen to you is that you have to ride the bus.
Yeah.
The very worst.
I think we knew that.
So we're going to run a diagnostics test where we're going to ask a series of questions, you know, throughout, you know, all the movies, trying to test them all, you know, because, you know, and you know, Casey, a layman, wrote diagnostics test, but we in the street racing community call it a dyno. You run it through the dyno.
That's all Alonso and I ever call it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But yes, let's go through the first question, see what everyone thinks. But out of 5 sleeveless t-shirts, how would we rate the ridiculousness of the title of the film?
This one's not, it's tricky because it's just a solid film title. I mean, you have like obviously shades of the good, the bad, and the ugly in there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's giving you a clean, this is what we're about. Also, this is very clean hook for the exact audience we're going through.
And there actually was already a movie called The Fast and the Furious back in the
50s. 1954.
Like, a Roger Corman film. But obviously this is setting the template for all the wacky permutations that we're going to be getting over the next two decades. So I got to say, this is a one, because this is where we start. We got to give ourselves room to go somewhere.
That's true. You know,
well, now, see, I'm going to say, if we're talking about the title, and how many sleeveless t-shirts, I'm going to say 3, because I feel like the title did good expectation management, in that there was a lot of fastness and there was a lot of furiousness.
Oh, yeah.
I think it could have maybe touched on, you know, again, in the interest of expectation management, sexy women with their sexy women with their tummies and boobs. I think that could have been set up.
Whereas I think those women were alluded to with fast.
Oh, touche, Drea. Point taken. Excellent. So that's my offer.
Okay.
Well, I agree. I think this is the tightest of the titles. All right. Next diagnostic. In this film, do any of the characters exhibit superhuman powers or capabilities? This one, I think they were pretty grounded in this one. This is before we.
Oh yeah.
We launch.
Yeah. Even like the big truck jackings are complicated, perhaps needlessly complicated, but they all seem to at least obey the rules of physics for the most part.
Right.
We need to keep it low here because it's going to get real wacky soon.
It does.
The art of this franchise is the heightening of it. When we get to the powers, we're like,
right. I think this one was meant to be believable.
Yeah. I will say the biggest stunt, because I remember, once again, at the time, the biggest stunt of this film was the Civic going under the freight
and like sliding on, like that was the big
that Letty got to drive. Mm-hmm. Yes. I enjoyed that.
So, but Clark Griswold also does it in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Everything's been done.
Yeah, yeah. The most memorable line.
I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
Yeah.
That's up there. And also, he's got an engine for a brain and Nas for blood.
This film had to have gotten money from NOS, the nitrous oxide company.
Oh, because they get some sweet close-ups, yeah.
The way they talked and championed NOS in this movie and how it was like the key to winning all the street race.
I need two tanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe NOS was sleeping with the director. We don't know.
Yeah. I mean, oh. It's
I kind of loved... I said 10-second car, not 10-minute car. And for me, because noisy movies get me really confused, to me that summed up what was at stake for our character.
For you in the back.
Yeah, sorry. Guilty.
I think the most shocking line, which I must go in there, is I didn't know that we were using hard F's back in 2001 in major movies. And I was like, oh.
Things change in 20 years. Like in the first 8 minutes, we get a fag. And I'm like, ooh. We're still doing that.
Yeah. So that, and once again, by Vince, who he's just so greasy.
He's thick in the good way, though.
He's so hot.
I was like,
is he?
He is so hot.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. But
is he?
He is a walking bad choice. Like,
yeah.
So hot.
I want to lay this down early though, because there is a weird homoerotic undercurrent to these movies, because so much of it is about sweaty guys in tight shirts facing off with each other, and it's like at any moment they could just start making out instead of punching each other.
Oh,
like,
yeah. And you kind of want them. No, you definitely want them to.
Oh, for sure. When Dave reviewed this first one for whatever site he was writing for at the time, and he ended it with a haiku that I can't remember, but I know the last line was, "Kiss him, Vin Diesel." and like, if you start paying attention to how much people talk about like my ass and your ass, it's like it just doubles it all.
Amazing. Yeah, it really is. Like, it's so wild, because I the way I described it when you were talking about the gayest, most homophobic scenes, it's like this is like Top Gun in a time where you're afraid to be called gay. Like Top Gun written by 13-year-olds, where it's like, all right, we're gonna play volleyball, but you know, we're gonna say no homo after it.
Yeah. The homo factor comes up more in the next one we'll talk about.
Oh, all right. Let's see. The diagnostic test is, was there any known drama surrounding the making of this movie? And Too Fast, Too Furious, I'm going to be talking for a long time.
Shocking. There is,
yeah. But for this film, nothing I know. I know the big thing with this movie, once again, because I was part of the community, was the biggest pushback they had was they were afraid that this movie was going to lead to a lot of street racing, and it did. But they had to do these PSAs, which if you have the Blu-ray like me, you can see, and it's literally you could tell they had him do it on an ADR day, but it's like Paul Walker sitting in like one of those like sound stages, and he's like looking at Cam, he's like, hey, we got a lot of physically trained professionally trained people doing stunts, don't try this at home. And that's it. And I remember hearing a lot about that.
That's an ouch.
Yeah, it's a big out. I mean, this movie was what got Paul Walker into cars. Like doing these movies, he really got into it. Which, you know,
for the last ones.
Yeah, we'll be getting there.
Tears will come.
Seven is gonna break me, I already know. Out of 10 NOS canisters, how would you rate the fastness and furiousness of this movie?
Well, I would have to say 8. I've never seen anything faster or furiouser in all my movie going.
And you've seen the second one.
Yes.
I'm going to say...
That's why I'm saving 2 for... It's just.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to say 5, because knowing what's to come, this is like just sort of whetting our appetite for fastness and furiosity.
Yeah, this one for me is like a 4. I see enough action films, and there's plenty of like wonderful films in different genres with racing in them. You know, you can hold up. I mean, you can go back to Bullet. You can go back to like this came out. Like the original Italian Job. Anyway, this is a 4 for me, but also knowing the world that we're in and where we're going.
This is a 9 out of 10 for me.
Wow.
Knowing what it was capturing, seeing it captured well, this was for me what it was like seeing Iron Man for the first time, being like, oh, you did it. You captured the thing that you wanted to capture. Oh, sorry. One important thing before we leave. Every Fast and Furious has a titular song attached to it, and I wanted everyone to know that Ja Rule's Furious is the song of this franchise.
Fast and the Furious, Ja Rule all one, yeah, it's our world, please believe.
It's going, we're going out of 5 slaps. And I think this is a good 3.5 slapper. And the reason I can say it fits the movie, but it's not something I can listen to on my own, like when I want to jam out to Hans Zimmer's Mountains from Interstellar. So this is a 3 out of 5. It goes with the movie in a good way. If you hit the 3, it means it's perfect for the movie. But once you get, if you want to get further than 3, how can I bang it out to this in the gym? Can I be listening to this chilling at the crib like Hans Zimmer's Mountains? No. But now we're going on a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about Too Fast, Too Furious, just as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Hey, podcast fan. We have a quick favor to ask. We'd like to get a better idea of who you are and what you care about. So, if you have a couple moments to spare, go to MaximumFun.org/ad survey. There, we've got a short, anonymous survey that won't take any more than 10 minutes to fill out. Plus, if you finish it, you'll get a 10% discount on our merch at the MaxFun store. MaxFun shows have always relied on support from our members and always will. The survey will help keep the few ads we do run relevant and interesting for you. Again, that's MaximumFun.org/ad survey, all one word. And thanks for your help.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Mary Jo Peel,
Alonso Duraldi.
And now it's time to move on to the sequel to The Fast and Furious, Too Fast, Too Furious. Alonzo, would you mind reading the synopsis for Too Fast, Too Furious that we took from IMDb?
Oh, I'd love to. Ex-LAPD cop Brian O'Connor. And whenever he says Brian in these movies, it's automatically hilarious. Paul Walker teams up with his ex-con friend Roman Pierce, Tyrese Gibson, and works with undercover U.S. Customs agent Monica Fuentes, Eva Mendez, to bring Miami-based drug lord Carter Verone, Cole Hauser, down.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean,
that synopsis ends in a preposition.
I'm just going to jump right away into something that I always laughed at about this is that Cole Hauser plays this Argentinian drug lord, and he's the most Irish looking mother ever. He's literally Cole Hauser's descended from the Warners, like the Warner Brothers family Warners. And
I will
like,
say
he loves a silky blouse,
right?
Though.
They've dyed his hair and put him in like pinky rings and satin, and they're like, totally. Enjoy
resort wear of evil.
It's so funny to me.
Yeah, I will say if you go to Buenos Aires, you'll see a lot of Cole Hausers. You'll see a lot of Cole.
That's where all the Nazis ended up.
Yeah. They did a smart move of saying Argentinian. That's the Latino you are.
Yes. That's so true.
Okay,
don't
mention
the war.
Okay, good.
You're going to be in Miami, but you're definitely not Cuban. You, sir, are Argentinian.
Argentine.
Yes. Who save the day. Good one, John.
I'll side note to that he has two henchmen. Carter Verone has these two henchmen who get paired up weirdly. It's like it wants to be an ensemble film, even though it's like thinks it's a two-hander. And One of the two henchmen, Roberto Sanchez, was the star of a film I produced called Lake Los Angeles.
Oh,
and
wow.
I had completely forgotten he was in this. And the whole time I'm like, Roberto's in an ejector seat. Wow.
I feel like a proud mother.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. So this one was a fun one for me. This one, another important seed to the Fast franchise, which is the comedic relationship between Tej and Rome, Roman Pierce, and Lute played by Chris Ludacris Bridges, and Rome played by Tyrese. Two big, like, at the time, pretty big, you know, musical acts, Ludacris and Tyrese. Tyrese... Y'all know I love Tyrese. I love being on Tyrese's watch. Tyrese's social media presence is if your black uncle got Instagram, but now your black uncle is famous and rich. That is his like energy online. But yeah, in this performance, you learn that like Brian and Roman, they go back, and Roman went to jail. Because we alluded to Brian having a past life, which I assume to be fake because he was undercover, but now it seems like with Roman, he did have like a salty past, and Roman doesn't mess with him because he left him in jail. And then there's this, my favorite scene when he's eating. He's like, why are you eating so much? Because I don't know when I'm going to go back.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's right.
He does.
Yeah, yeah.
He really, he Brad Pitts in Ocean's 11 all over this. Like, there's never a scene where Tyrese is not eating something.
Yeah.
I'm reminded by this movie that over the course of this franchise, one of my favorite parts of it is Ludacris.
Yeah.
And my stone rock bottom least part of all of them is Tyrese.
No.
I liked it.
Oh, yeah. You feel really.
Yeah, I actually, because this is tricky. Obviously, Vin Diesel's not in this. And I feel pretty sure we're going to hear about why from Iffy.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought that I actually was surprised because Roman's character, or Tyrese's character, Roman, becomes such a comedic duo with Luda's character later on that I forgot when he's introduced, he's given in this very like hero form. Like we meet him, he's so handsome. He's another bad boy. Like he's supposed to check a lot of the boxes that Dominic Toretto did in the first one.
Yeah.
I definitely had to Google both of their heights because he is like a few inches shorter than Paul Walker. And I was like, what's going on here? I thought he was tall. What is happening? Is Paul Walker very tall? Anyway, I hope.
Well, Tyrese was a model, although you would practically not know that from his Wikipedia page because they seem to have wiped out that entire section.
Well, see, that's how I know him from. I remember those days. That was my connection.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that the opening street race has been conveniently like cartoon colored for us. Like everybody has their own glow of pink or blue or red or whatever. It's like, okay, well, I definitely know who's.
And not just that, this is where the franchise really starts to embrace representation,
absurdity,
but also the idea of like, okay, we have another female driver since Michelle Rodriguez's character's not here, and it's going to be played by Devin Aoki and
Steve Aoki's sister.
And she has like a pink car. And
an anime icon
and an anime
on her
icon.
Laptop.
It's absolutely ridiculous. But then we also have, honestly, all of these movies, I'm always looking for Michael Pena, and I'm sure he is like super mad he's not in them. But we have a Latino driver. We have freaking
Michael Ealy.
Michael Ealy, shows up, and I'm like, wait, really? I forgot he was in this. And he
aren't
also,
you too good for this?
He has my favorite. Oh, we'll do the vote on favorite lines again. It is not an iconic line, but it was my favorite line, which is his girlfriend comes over at the beginning and is like, you better win this so we can pay rent. And he's like, oh, I know. And then within 30 seconds, he's like, oh, yeah, I'll add a $3,500 bet on top of it. Like, how much is your rent?
No, right.
What?
Right.
What's going on in Miami?
Where's your rent money? Yes. Hey, I think this is another, speaking of going to Drea's point about representation, because I was kind of fixated on this on both movies, is the, again, the traditional representation of sexy women. In Too Fast and Too Furious, there's actually a large woman that passes through. She doesn't have any lines. Yeah. She doesn't have any significance whatsoever, but she walks by, she looks at a car. And that is something that I catches my eye.
I noticed that they stopped doing that.
Right. Yeah. A brief stab at inclusion that was never revisited.
That was fun.
No more.
Yeah.
I know this whole, like, I remember when I first watched it, we're getting double reviews here. You're getting the review from me, but also review from younger me. And younger me was not happy with the CGI in the initial car race. I was like, oh, you took the soul out of it. It's so CGI when they would hit the corners. But looking back, it's fine.
Good.
Although there are moments like there's like CGI, I think in the first movie, I think there's CGI out the window when like Brian and Mia are driving together.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing of like, oh man, that stuff ages so fast.
Yeah.
So like our eyes get so used to a better, yeah, you know, sharper kind of yeah, thing.
Wow, right.
That you look like not that long, you're like, oh, what? Was this like, did the Méliès brothers make this movie? Like, what the?
Is it coming out of the screen? My favorite CGI in this that I find is such a grounded in such a particular time in cinema, and they do it in both of these, so I'll be interested to see if they can continue to, I don't remember if they do, but that thing where it like you see the top of like an instrument in the engine or in the hood, whatever.
Yeah. Cause, oh, right.
And then the camera goes like into the hood and it like follows the whole cable down to the whatever. And
the opening credits of Fight Club,
yes,
over and over
like,
again.
It's Charlie's Angels. It's so many things. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember when we loved doing that and everything.
Yeah, I mean, that was for us, the street race community, because we got to see what's in the heart of the vehicle. That helps us, you know, really connect with the cars, which is a great time for us to go into our dyno test.
Oh, let's get to that dyno.
Let's put it up on the dyno, see what kind of RPMs we're going to get on this bad boy.
Oh my God.
So out of zero, I think this is, I think I know what everyone's going to say, but at 0 out of 5 sleeveless shirts, how do we rate the ridiculousness of the title of the film?
It's so good.
This is a 4, I think. When it came out, like, really? Too Fast, Too Fury. Like, as sequel titles go, it's right up there with Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married, T-O-O. in terms of like, whoa, we're gonna take this pun for all it's worth.
Yeah.
But I think it gets even nuttier later, so that's why I'm holding back on my 5
until
a future installment.
It influences my rating, my sleeveless t-shirt rating, knowing the titles to come. So this is also a 4 for me.
And I'm sorry, what was the, it was 1 to 10?
5.
1 to 5.
Sorry, 1 to 5. I'm going to say a 1 because I get irritated when a numeral is used instead of the word. Like it just feels so, I don't know what you're going for. Or is that supposed to be cool? Am I supposed to be impressed?
You are not a fan of Prince titles, are you?
What about
no?
What?
But see, Drea, that's where I was going. Like it just felt very derivative of Prince, our Minneapolis hero, Prince. No, I am totally forgiving of Prince. I love it.
What about sequels where they use a numeral for a number, for a letter in the word of the title?
Don't get me started on 7, okay? Because I will go off on your ass. I really will.
So I think the next question, which is very, I think, a very good dino question and something we're going to ask for every movie, but by what percentage does the craziness increase from the previous film? This is a good question. And I think it's subtle, but I think we ramp up the craziness when we do the scene where Eva Mendes and Paul Walker are staring at each other while driving, and he purposely perfectly stops at the light.
Yeah.
And then Tyrese caps it off with the, he did the eye thing, didn't he? It was, I was like, oh, we're
and he this taught is, us that. Like you have a whole scene where a man who is driving just stares at the woman in the passenger seat for like 3 minutes straight while driving like 70 down a residential, and then he stops. Somehow the driver behind him, Tyrese, notices what's happening, and then when he stops and pulls up next to him, admonishes him for it, and then says he invented it. It's perfect. It is perfect.
I think frankly, for that opening race with the, once we start getting the color coding, I'm like, okay, we have already left, like the first movie, I could see where that would kick off a franchise that was trying to maintain some semblance of reality in the street racing world and maybe tie crimes into it so we can have the cops and blah, blah, blah. But this one, you know, between the CG and the like the hot, the pink anime car with the pink lighting at the foot pedals, like, yeah. You know, it's we are making that leap into cloud cuckoo land where, yeah, this franchise
let's
is going to go.
Also remember that the anime avatar gets angry when it's losing. You, somehow, yeah, it knows its representation.
Yeah,
in
there. Yeah.
It's like, ah!
I will also say, crazy on the narrative level of, you know what interests me most is how much they shoehorn the necessity of cars in this. And, oh, yeah, what they need to do does not require cars in any way, shape, or form. Like, they are hired by this Argentinian drug lord to, like, get one thing. Like, it does not need a car, but they make it not only require a car, it requires two cars, so he needs a partner. Like, it's the most. So I'm going to give a percentage of 17% increase.
That
almost
good.
Entirely, yeah, because of the narrative stretch just to make it work within their whole thing. So I just want to know if we're going to discuss the superhuman powers.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Do any characters exhibit superhuman powers or capabilities?
Because in my memory, they did. But when I rewatched it, I did not see any. Like, it still has...
No, right.
This, yeah. They give you an ejection button. You know, like, it's pretty cut and dry.
And one of them fails. Because that's what happens in real life. Like,
I mean, it happens in Top Gun. It happens in Too Fast, Too Furious.
You know? For real, people.
I have to. I'm going to just jump to gayest, most homophobic scene because...
Oh, I have a story. Okay. Now, it's funny because there's two different things happening here. First of all, you know, the late John Singleton, you know, obviously a very talented filmmaker, a trailblazer in a lot of ways. I met him several times. He was always lovely. But there is a definite string of an undercurrent of no homo throughout his movies. Perhaps most flagrantly in Four Brothers, but it definitely pops up here. We get a pair of maricones from the Cuban goons. And we get at the end, Tyrese telling the jailbound Cole Hauser, "Don't drop the soap." And that's in the movie, and that might have been scripted, whatever. But here's what happened at the premiere of Too Fast, Too Furious. On the red carpet, Paul Walker was asked by somebody, if you were gay, who would be your celebrity crush? It was just this innocuous question.
I remember this.
They were asking a bunch of people. And Tyrese is next to him. Paul Walker goes, I don't know. Interesting question. Tyrese says, oh, man, I can't even answer that question. And then Paul Walker goes, yeah, man, I can't even answer that question. Oh. And I was just like, all right, well, fuck both of you. And, you know, let's just carry on.
It's so funny how, like, yeah, it really is that dude energy where if one could just play along, it's just answer the goddamn question.
Exactly.
And say it's Ryan Gosling, because we all know it's Ryan Gosling.
Right. Well, and the other thing that offends me as a person who came up doing stand-up comedy, the don't drop the soap thing is so hack.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I mean, do they also think they're not in Kansas
it's all shitty,
anymore?
But that's a level that I just like, it's hack too, assholes.
I would be hard-pressed to find a movie in which a character is threatened with prison or heading to prison where somebody doesn't make some crack about anal rape.
Alonzo, I want you to do research on that. I want you to come up with your white paper on that.
Well, because I'm always, whenever it comes up, I set my watch by, I'm like, okay, someone's going to say they love guys like you in prison, or you'll be real popular.
Yeah.
And it always happens.
Yeah, I know. It's so whack. Like, dude, even if you do a hacky fake hours, like, don't drop the soap because the floors are dirty.
Give us a twist. Give us a surprise.
Because of your sciatica.
My God, I would watch that. So, Iffy, I know that you have some known drama.
Can we do a
Christmas minute of known drama?
Oh, yes. Okay.
Will you
try and pack it
all into one, like,
oh yeah, I'm gonna try my hardest to fit all this
chunk.
Okay, so there is one very obvious missing person in this movie. Vin Diesel was offered this movie and he turned it down. He was actually offered $25 million to return as Toretto, but he turned it down and chose to appear in The Chronicles of Riddick instead. And when asked, he said he didn't like the script, and he is quoted of saying, "They didn't take the Francis Ford Coppola approach to it. They approached it like they did sequels in the 80s and 90s, where they would just drum up a new story unrelated for the most part and slap the name on it. And so that's why he turned it down, because he was like he just did not like the script. He said they didn't take the Francis Ford Coppola approach.
Sure.
And the second missing, if Ja Rule, a rapper, was in one, why wouldn't he be in the second one, and why'd they go with Ludacris? Well, he was offered $500,000 to appear as Tej, and he turned it down. As Singleton said, he got too big for himself, and he turned it down. He turned down $500,000. He was acting too big to be in a sequel. He wouldn't even return calls.
Fire Festival to create.
Well, it's also Ja Rule wanted to have Tyrese's part. So he didn't want to play Tej. He wanted to play Roman Pierce, and they were not interested in that. And so he didn't want to talk to them about Tej, left it, and has probably been weeping, thinking of Chris Bridges' sweet,
it's so funny because, like, ever since. If you look at the script itself, you can know why fundamentally Ja Rule could not be Roman.
That easily if they'd wanted him as a lead.
Yeah, but I don't think we want Ja Rule.
And neither did they. Well, no.
That's a whole other thing.
Speaking of Luda, though, what about the song for this one, Iffy?
Oh, see, you're already.
I was too excited. You're too excited.
Yeah. No, you're just good, because now you know who did it. It was Ludacris, once again, my favorite rapper. And this is Act a Fool, which he says the title in the song. You know, I really love someone who says
80,000
times. Too fast. Yes, exactly. Too furious. Yeah. Too fast. Act a fool.
Too fast. Too furious. I'm too fast for y'all, man. Too fast, too furious. I'm too fast for y'all.
Oh, you just came home from doing a bid. Tell me what you gon' do.
Act a fool.
Somebody broke in and cleaned out your crib. Boy, what you gon' do?
Act a fool.
Just bought a new.
And it's a song about, you know, what type of things would make you act a fool. Like, if you're coming home from doing a bid, tell them what you gon' do. Act a fool. Somebody broke in, cleaned out your crib. Boy, what you gonna do? Act a fool. Just bought a new pair and they scuffed your shoes. Tell me what you gonna do. Act a fool.
We got it.
Yeah.
Yes, no, I know.
Yeah, that.
I can't wait for Iffy's reading of the song that Ice Cube does at the end of Deep Blue Sea.
Deepest, bluest. My head is like a shark's fin.
That's a 4 out of 5 slapper. I listen to that whenever I'm driving. There are songs that I listen to when I drive in Christmas in LA, because I'm from here where everyone goes home, and all us old street racers, me and a guy who also had a car seat in his back seat, and he was in a Prius, raced down the 134 on a clear December day, because we could, and we relived our street race life. So 4 out of 5 for me. But that's enough of rating the song. Time to rate this movie. Out of 10 NOS canisters, how would you rate the fastness and furiousness of this movie?
6. It gets a little faster and a little furiouser, but none of these cars leave the ground. So I'm saying 6.
Ooh. I'm giving it a 2 because it is my least favorite of the entire franchise. And on its own, you know, it's okay, whatever. But, like, the idea that they thought this is where this was all going to go versus where they ultimately realized it was going to go. It's like, yeah, you made the right choice not making more movies like this one.
Also, I'm a liar. Several of these cars left the ground, but you guys get what I'm saying. Yeah,
I hear you.
Well, I'm going to say 4 because I feel like my expectation was really heightened having never seen one before with the first one. So I feel like I was kind of blown away by that one because I loved the stunt shit. Like, that really blew my mind. And I thought a lot of the cinematography was pretty cool. And then this one with the whole drug lord thingy, I kind of trailed off on this one.
With this, I'm going to have to give it a 7 out of 10. You know, it definitely takes a dip in the series. It's setting up, you know, we introduce Rome, Tej, build that relationship. But it seems like what the later movies do really well, which we'll get into when we get to those. This one, I think, is using a rehashed, tired version of like this type of movie where it's like, oh, you know, you have the drug lord and you're a bad guy, but you're going to help us stop him because you're the only one who can. And it's, and it just feels like a parody of a parody, and how we see it with the rat scene, the rat, like, and the guy who looks like the schlubby guy who gets kicked around by the drug lord. Like, it really doesn't take it to the next level. We got to see a good amount of races. This taught Iffy back then to fall in love with Devin Aoki. But of course, immediately dethroned by Eva Mendez, just deep into that.
Minutes later.
Yeah. Minutes. I'm like,
what,
wait, hold on.
Fickle heart.
Yeah. That's why you don't fill up your plate at the beginning of the minute. You know? You gotta scope it out.
The Golden Corral.
Very wise.
Yeah, you gotta scope it out. Then you look like a buffoon.
I have learned so much.
R.I.P. Sioux Plantation.
Ooh, I hope they reopen by something that isn't Plantation. That might help you get sales. All right. We're ripped rolling, and this has me so excited for the future episodes. But we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Hey, Max Funsters, it's Jesse Thorne. This week on my public radio interview show, Bullseye, I'm talking with Tina Fey and Robert Carlock about creating Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, 30 Rock, and also just kind of why they're the best at everything.
There was a window of time when we would just go to awards things and pick up our prizes and party with the people from Mad Men.
You can find Bullseye at MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search for Bullseye with Jesse Thorne.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya. I'm your host, Iffy Whiteyway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Mary Jo Peel,
Drea Clark.
And now comes the moment where we must decide which movie will move on to compete against next week's films, Tokyo Drift and Fast and Furious. I know this is difficult.
Are you revving?
Yes.
Alonzo is revving.
I'm loving it.
Revving.
I wish everyone revved. You know, I think Alonzo is the only one taking this serious.
I don't know how to rev.
See, I like that add turbo in mind, so I go. But we must decide. The Fast and the Furious or Too Fast and Furious? Which wins the drag race? Drea, we'll start with you. Who wins
the
race?
Okay, so this one for me is, I'm looking at overall solidness. I'm voting for the original, The Fast and the Furious. I think I like the repositioning of that. It works for me all over, and it didn't have the same distancing things. The ridiculousness in Too Fast, Too Furious was more of, it took me away from things rather than made me think, oh, this is madness, which is what I'm looking for. Yeah.
Mary Jo?
I'm going to say The Fast and the Furious too, because A, I understood what was going on, because every time you introduce drug dealing into a movie, I get really confused about who hates who or who's going to kill who, and I get really anxious. I was kind of hooked by it, and now I am so curious to see the rest of the franchise, the way you guys have discussed it.
Ooh. Nice.
I look forward to that.
Love it.
Yeah, the checkerboard flag absolutely goes down on The Fast and the Furious. I had not revisited it in 20-ish years since I first saw it. And, you know, the big stunt sequences hold up. And I think Jordana Brewster does not get enough credit for being a recognizable human being in these movies, which is a thankless gig. But I think she's quite good. And I think that I liked her whole character arc in this, and I think that Walker and Diesel, as the sort of slabs of charisma that they are called upon to be, are doing it real well. So, yeah, the first one for sure.
Nicely put.
Thank you.
Iffy?
Yeah, it's clear. The choice is clear. I'm going to have to agree with everyone on the dais with me. It is The Fast and the Furious. It's the tighter movie. It introduced the franchise. You're invested mm-hmm. in these characters, you know, and everyone seems to be fun, you know. We're rooting for you too Fast, Too Furious, but pack your bags. You can't stay here.
We were rooting for you. You just did a Tyra Banks.
We were all rooting for you.
As Jeff Probst would say, got nothing for you. Go back to camp.
Nice.
Well, before we get to staff picks, since we're discussing nothing but Fast and Furious films for the next couple of weeks, we wanted to spend some time highlighting an indie film that's out now. And this is our Indie Movie Minute. Drea, I believe you have a movie you'd like to discuss, so your time starts now.
I do. For the Indie Movie Minute this week, I have a film that is coming out on demand on May 26th. It is called I Will Make You Mine. It is directed by Lin Chen, who also stars in it. And it is sort of a unofficial, but kind of official, third in a trilogy that centered around this singer-songwriter, Go Nakamura, who plays himself and helped write the first few, and I think actually has writing credits on all of them. Lin played the love interest in the first one. There's a second film with another woman, and this film, Dave Boyle, the original director, handed off directing duties to Lin. It's her first film, and because it largely centers around three of the women who were previous lovers of Go Nakamura and him coming back to town and them adjusting to it. It was meant to have premiered at South by Southwest this year and was sadly denied that beautiful option. So I really hope people support it. I think it's great. I like the whole trilogy, but I Will Make You Mine. Check it out. Support indie film. Go Bears.
Ooh, bam, bam, bam. That means the time is up. All right, well, I guess it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie, in theaters, streaming, what have you.
Well, I hate to admit it, I am not very adventurous in my movie watching because I have to watch so much shit. And so I get a little burned out. But so I kind of took a page from Alonzo's book and I just opened up Canopy, which he turned me on to, and pressed something, and it was, maybe you've already covered it, it was After Class, which was originally released as Safe Spaces with Justin Long, and it was pretty entertaining, and it's really funny, it's really dynamic about capturing family dynamics, sorry to repeat myself, and you know who's great in it? Is Fran Drescher. I had only known her from The Nanny, and she's so good in it. I just had so much heart for her, and it was just really interesting. And I love Richard Schiff, so there.
What about you, Alonzo? What you thinking?
Well, you know, I was reminded in watching these two movies that one of my favorite films that we don't talk nearly enough about that has the sort of crazy, cartoony espionage essence of the later Fast and the Furious movies, but also stars both Jordana Brewster of this franchise and Devin Aoki of Too Fast, Too Furious. That would be Angela Robinson's delightful 2004 comedy Debs, about schoolgirl spies in, you know, little Catholic plaid skirts, and Jordana Brewster as the sort of lesbian villain who wants to, you know, destroy the world but winds up falling in love with one of the Debs instead. It is fun and charming and just it's kicky. I don't use that word a lot for movies.
Hey, it's, I'm on it. That sounds
it's
great.
Kicky. It's so good.
It's kicky. It's a lot of fun. So, you know, and Angela went on to do a ton of stuff. She did, you know, Herbie Fully Loaded and directed a lot of L Word and True Blood and has done, you know, a bunch of other stuff. But Deb starred as a short that she had at Sundance and then it became a feature. And the feature, yeah, it was like, I think it definitely has a cult following, but could always, that cult needs to be bigger. So
and we talked,
go watch
I think
Debs.
We talked about Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman on this show.
We
too,
did, yes,
film.
Yes, yeah. Yes. That's her most recent feature. Yeah. So yeah, love Angela, love Debs.
Yeah, she's great.
Ooh.
It's great. Mine is totally different energy from that. But as you guys know, I am obsessed with drag queens in general, and specifically Trixie Mattel. And I finally got a chance to watch Trixie Mattel Moving Parts, which is the documentary about her on Netflix. It premiered at Tribeca last year. And it's lovely. She's a beautiful singer-songwriter in addition to everything else. And like many people, has a really rich and complicated backstory and history. And it also, I will say, it touches on her relationship both personally and professionally with Katya, who goes through, she falls off the wagon while they're filming. And so if that is something that will help you to have a heads up on, there you go. But it is on Netflix and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Ooh.
What about you, Iffy?
Well, with me, I'm been trying to highlight, you know, some of these stars that we're experiencing. Tyrese seems to be, you know, a little turdy. So I'm foregoing his pick this week, which was gonna be Baby Boy. But if you want to see some life early together, Paul Walker and some early Dulé Hill, let's go see She's All That. If you really want to go back to what we thought of high school back in the day.
Oh, right. I like that you brought the two actors from She's All That you brought up were Paul Walker and Dulé Hill.
The most memorable, sure. Honestly. You know, Matthew Lillard as well. Doing you gotta, can't
excuse
forget.
Me, Lil He's Kim everywhere. Is in that movie. Lil
and,
Kim.
That was Usher.
Yes.
Yeah. That was who we all were talking about, Lil Kim and Usher. So I wanted to put some respect on Dulé Hill, sure. Matthew Lillard, and Paul Walker's name.
Yep.
So that's my pick. But, you know, thank you. Listen, watch those. If you do, let us know. But before we go, let's read a 5-star review. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it on air. And this one is short and sweet from Redheaded Jen. Yep, you make my day. Love you guys. Your podcast rocks. Never miss a listen.
Yay! Love Jen. Thanks, Redheaded Jen. Nice.
Thank you. Now, Mary Jo, thank you so much for joining us. Yay. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
No, I always forget what I'm doing, but this has been so much fun, you guys. Thanks. So much fun. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, with that being said, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. And just a reminder, you can buy a Jumbotron on our show by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/ Who Shot Your Podcast, or send us an email at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.